Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, listeners, I want to thank our good friends at Slipped Disc for their enthusiastic support of Speaking Soundly. Be sure to check out slippeddisc.com for the latest inside information on classical music now. Today's episode with my longtime mentor and friend, the one and only Wynton Marsalis, begins our celebration of Black History Month. I hope you enjoy it. Wynton Marsalis is a living legend. The Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, ambassador of the arts, and artistic director of jazz at Lincoln Center plays the trumpet with a warm and rich tone that is instantly recognizable throughout the world. It's a sound he was encouraged to develop from an early age.
Sweets Edison was a mentor of mine. He said, "Yeah, baby boy, you got to get more weight on your sound. You got to get more hair on your sound. I picked up a trumpet for you in Europe, and I want you to play this horn for at least 1 or 2 months, then I'm going to come back and hear how your sound is." Then he came back and heard how I played. He said, "I'm going to take my horn back. That's not the horn."
You're listening to Speaking Soundly, a backstage pass to today's biggest stars of the music world. I'm your host, David Krause, principal trumpet of the Metropolitan Opera. During each episode, you'll hear me speak with inspiring performers about their creative process and the personal journey that led them to the stage. I got to start with the sound you make on the trumpet. Nobody sounds like you. I remember the first time I heard it, it was on a record my dad bought me. The tune was Angel Eyes. I was hooked right away. That's the way I want it to sound. And it became my gold standard.
Well, thank you for your over-assessment of me and your kindness towards me. You know, I mean, comment on the depth and beauty of your sound and also the originality of it and the pride I have when I hear it. You know, we all have a journey we have to go on. And even in the age I am now, of course, much older than you, but we continue to go on and work on our stuff.
You're not that much older than me, but when you were younger, did you also listen and emulate other trumpet players? I mean, who inspired you?
Yeah, mainly people from records, you know. I liked Maurice André's sound in terms of how the sound he got on a piccolo trumpet, kind of characteristic sound. And jazz, of course, Miles Davis, loved his sound, kind of dark. And with Miles, it was the record, "Someday My Prince Will Come." I missed that record over and over and over again. The feeling this sound, and Freddie Hubbard in the 70s, everybody loved Freddie. Kind of big sound. I remember a ballad he played called Skylark. So, you know, I love that sound. Clifford Brown, from Clifford Brown with strings. I could play, even now, I could play Clifford Brown solo on Memories of You. And it wasn't a trumpet player, but the other person I listened to a lot was Train. I learned Countdown on the trumpet. I remember practicing it in high school. I listened to those people over and over, those records, over and over again,
Right, and do you think all that listening actually made an impact on your playing? Do you think you really started to sound like Maurice André or Miles Davis?
No. Not really. I don't think so. Because people used to always say when I was younger that I sounded like Miles. And I would always crack a joke to my brother. We'd be talking. I'd say, man, he must not be able to hear. Miles never sounded this sad. Even when he was 18 or 19, he was better than what I sound. And a Sweets Edison was a mentor of mine. Even though Sweets' style was from another era, so I wasn't sophisticated enough to imitate him. But I loved him as a person. And he didn't like my sound. So he was always saying, yeah, baby boy, you got to get more weight on your sound. You got to get more hair on your sound. Your sound is it's too light. He said, I picked up a trumpet for you in Europe, and I want you to play this horn for at least 1 or 2 months, and I'm going to come back and hear how your sound is. And he came back and he heard how I played. He said, I'm going to take my horn back because it's not the horn. You need to work on your sound.
Tell me about when you first started playing trumpet. Were you very serious right away?
I mean, man, I didn't like the trumpet. I didn't want to get a ring around my lips. I didn't practice. I remember once I even put a chemical experiment in my trumpet. Like I had a chemistry set and I put an experiment in. Me and my brothers, we lived kind of in the country, man. We would do all kinds of stuff like catch bees and do stuff country boys did, man, you know.
I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, we were country, man. So we were here. I remember having a trumpet, but I wasn't serious about playing it. I remember cleaning it, and I remember how it smelled. You know how a case smells? I remember that.
That's a very specific smell. So your father, Ellis, he was a great pianist. Did he also insist that you play the piano?
My dad was not he would tell me later to learn how to play the piano, but he wasn't. He had been harder on my brother Branford, like making him play piano and clarinet, but that didn't work. Like, my father was not the type of person that would make you do stuff. He wasn't going to aspire more for you than you did for yourself. I mean, most of the times I was just making my dad laugh, man, because he was struggling when I was growing up. He was having a hard time. And I was always with him. I always hung with him, but I didn't really like the music. I just liked hanging with him because he was real serious, but I joked around with him constantly. And he didn't joke a lot, but I would always make him laugh, you know.
So even though your dad was a working musician and you were following in his footsteps, your relationship wasn't just about music.
No, because my dad would do stuff like he taught me how to catch a baseball on one hop. I remember once me and him set a basketball goal up. Then we went to the junkyard and got a pipe and we went and got a goal and we measured everything out and dug a hole. It was just me and him. And when we measured it out and we mixed the cement, we put it in the ground. It was 10 foot 4 inches tall. So I learned how to shoot high, you know. But he would do that kind of stuff. And I was around him. It wasn't because I could play. He didn't think I could play. It wasn't an environment for kids either. It was like clubs and dives. But I like being in the place with the old people and hear how nasty they were talking. And people down on luck a lot of times too, man. You know, alcoholics, people struggling. Especially if you're a musician, you finish late. So when you're in a club, you see what happens at the end of the night. And these were not glamorous places. It just me and him. I just hung with him because I liked him. I would hang with him.
Right. Well, actually, hanging with my parents is what led me to meet you. They took me to the Blue Note to hear you play, and I sat right in the front row, just underneath your bell. I was the only kid in the club, and it was amazing.
I mean, I loved your parents and your daddy, you know, just the love and the feeling, man, of your whole family, your daddy, how cool he was.
You know, I'll never forget this one time my mom brought me in for a lesson with you. We drove into the city, and at the end of the lesson, you gave me your trumpet. It completely blew my mind because when I took it home, I sounded like you. You were still in this trumpet. I still don't understand how the instrument can carry the sound of the player that owned it and played it for so many years.
You know, sometimes you meet people, everything is spiritual. And when you touch the physicists are figuring it out now about these particles and how stuff is. Everything is connected a certain way. It's all connected, man. And we don't understand it. So we tend to take our limited understanding and we get our concept of reality from that understanding. And anything that's outside of that understanding, we think, well, it's mysterious or it's something I want to be true. It's not a fact. It's a feeling. And you can feel those undertones. And they exist in inanimate objects that people have played, inanimate things that people have touched. Their spirit stays on it. That's why sometimes spirit people ask somebody to bring something, the person they're trying to conjure had. And people think it's hocus pocus, but it's not. I mean, sometimes it is, but a lot of times it's not. It's a spiritual thing. You know, I taught a lot of kids, but I didn't have the same feeling I had with you. I can remember the feeling of you as a kid, seeing you at Carnegie Hall. You know, I can remember.
That was a long time ago. How do you remember that?
I remember. I don't forget nothing, man. Nah, come on. We're connected across a lot of time. People look at me and you, and they might think if they're 8 or 9, these are 2 old guys. They won't know the difference between it. It's like when I play, I like to play for elementary school bands, you know. I would just go sit in the trumpet section. Of course, they didn't know who I was or anything. A little kid next to me would be maybe 9 years old, and he'd be like, well, you played the part pretty good. You know, do you take private lessons? Well, how long have you been playing? And I would say something like 42 years. And then they would just look at you like 40 years to a 9-year-old seems like you Methuselah, something you're not still alive.
Well, you've always sounded amazing, and it's hard to believe the trumpet was ever difficult for you. Was there a point when it was challenging?
Yeah, I feel like I struggled with my horn the whole time. I felt like when I was 25, I got better. Something happened. My playing improved. But in the beginning, the music we were playing, it was mainly like for singing and guitars and so loud. So it wasn't about you connecting with people. And when I could play with an orchestra, which was not frequently, then I could kind of hear it. A lot of times gigs I was on, I couldn't even hear myself playing. I mean, it's loud. I feel like once I got to be on the road, I was always unsure. I always felt like a lot of guilt that I got so much publicity before I felt I could play. And I was always mouthy. So, you know, I was saying a lot, but it wasn't because I felt I could play. Just things about the culture and the society seem obvious to me. So right. It created a lot of problems because, you know, you don't want a young person saying, especially a black person, you're supposed to just be grateful you're there. And then I think when I was around 24, 25, then I started to feel like my playing improved. And then later, when it was really hard, I had an operation when I was, this was like 2000.
Oh, God, that's right. Your lip.
Man, when I had that operation, That was like 2006, maybe. Oof. Right. I had to relearn how to play. That was rough. When I went first hit the first note, I said, okay, this is going to be tough right here.
And how long was the process to build it back up?
Man, I have to say, still to this day, I don't have the accuracy that I had. I will never be like that, I don't think. I think that's it for that. Yeah, because I had the size of a pea taken out of my lip. So, man, it was a struggle. Any kind of change, even you get something between your teeth and you play, it's different. Man, you imagine my whole Amish was completely different. It'd be stuff I never would miss, man. It became a struggle for me.
Well, despite that operation or any struggles you've had, when you play, the trumpet completely disappears and the audience hears exactly what's in your head. Was there a point when you realized that the trumpet would not be an obstacle and pretty much whatever you can think of, you could play?
I think by the time I got into my early 30s, I was playing better. You know, in terms of, I remember trying to practice to be more vocal. Like, it sounded contrived at first. I mean, I was trying to learn how to scoop notes a certain way, bend notes, play with air, do unusual effects. You know, a lot of things I would work on to be like I was talking. And I worked on, I need to go back to working on. At one point, I was really trying to do like a lot of different stuff. Scooping notes a certain way, playing it like I'm talking, hollering, you know, shouting, I would think about. Sometimes I would take something and read it and play it like I was speaking it. Like, I would look at a page and I would start reading. We would lead a discussion about the music industry. I tried to play my housekeeper, Anna Castillo. I played stuff and asked her if she understood what I was saying.
That's funny. So you've been advocating for music and arts education for years now. How does playing an instrument, even if you're not going to be a professional musician, how does it benefit someone's life?
Well, I think if you can play an instrument, it teaches you so many things. Discipline, it helps you to focus your personality. It teaches you to listen to other people. Playing in an ensemble teaches you how to fulfill familial roles because instruments fall into families with different functions. It teaches you how to deal with time and math because you're dealing with all things that unfold at a regular pace and you have to remember things of repetition. It enriches your mind because you learn melody and harmony. You learn the depth feel. It teaches you how to objectify sounds, like you remember the horse, when you make the trumpet sound like a horse or a sleigh ride,
right?
It's here. Make this instrument can represent something else, or the sound of a train. You have a library of stuff you can play that comes from across across history of Western music. And the fact that you learn how to hear music also can help you in your playing music, listen to other people's music and understand what their objectives are. You learn things like call and response, 2D parts that you're playing with everybody, a harmony part, a background part, foreground, all things that are part of living. Sometimes you're in the foreground, sometimes you're in the background. And you also get a sense of achievement as an individual and as a group. So individually, you improve on your instrument, but you also can be a part of a band where y'all are trying to compete or do something or play a football game, whatever it is. And man, you can feel a sense of, wow, you know, we played that. And also with a band, especially when you're younger, the band is so sad when you start off. And when you think of how much improvement it shows over time, you realize just when you work on things, they get better. And then you interface with adults. You entertain your colleagues, kids in your school or your parents. You give them something to do. And on. There's so many social things that music is important to help developing in kids. I think for the ones who don't pick up instruments, it's important for them to be in choirs or have to activate the musical part of their personality. Mm-hmm. Rhythms are important and dance is important. Now, we've eliminated a lot of that. It's too bad. Like social dance, we need to bring that back. People used to dance. Everybody was dancing. Like this whole kind of social thing about dancing and whether you can dance and you can and you don't have rhythm. So it's not true. Man, you know how many ballrooms they built around America in the land between 1900 and in 1920? People dance. Everybody's not going to play. It's kind of like if I said everybody has to play soccer. Everybody's not going to do that. But everybody can dance because there's dances at schools. There's dances everywhere. You just can't have the same vocal music for everybody. Right. I mean, people dance to music long before they start cursing to me. I played hundreds of dances in high school. I mean, we played a lot, like 4 gigs a week. I joined a band when I was 13 and I saw people dance. Some could dance, some couldn't, but it was social. Everybody was dancing, having a good time. It was all kind of people, black people, white people, young people, old people, wedding receptions, people dance. That's what we played for.
Right. You've been touring throughout the United States for years now. Is there a message in the music that you hope gets delivered to the communities that you play in?
Yeah, I just think I would like to re-mythologize how we conceive of ourselves as Americans. I think our country's mythology does not serve us well because it's too segregated, too much racism. And that's not because of this moment where everybody's talking about it. You know, I've been talking about this stuff. And I think we need to discover how to embrace one another. And the music can teach us how to embrace each other in a non-fake way. Like my relationship with you is not fake. When I saw you, I didn't look at you like, here's a white kid or here's a Jewish kid or whatever it is. I wasn't thinking about you like that, man. You're a kid. And my teacher when I was in high school was a white guy. He didn't look at me like that. He taught me. I remember when he told me that his wife was too prejudiced that I couldn't come to their home. He explained it to me in very adult terms. He said, this is my wife. I'm not going to leave my wife because she don't want you to come into my house.
How old were you then?
You know, I was 15 or 16. I wasn't like today where people fall apart every time somebody tells them something. Man, it was a different time. So it seemed today you wouldn't go into that with kids because they're kids till they're 100. In that time, it wasn't like that. So if I could do anything, it would just get people to see the best of what has happened here and to have them try to imitate the best. Not to think the worst has not happened because it has, but to let the path toward improvement come through. Like you have two modes. You have to say, I am not going to do the worst, but you have to also say, I am going to do the best. Like you noticed, you were telling me about sounds. You said, man, I love this sound. I want to do this sound. You didn't say, man, I listened to all these trumpet players whose sounds I hated, and I realized I didn't want to sound like them. Now, you could have said that. Come up the positive frame of reference. I'm proud of that. I can't tell you how proud I am, really. I brag on you all the time, man. You don't know it. And I'm proud of your mama, man. She was in there for you. She had to go through changes to get you to my house. I mean, I wasn't the easiest to get in touch with. She would always be, you know, it's David's mom. I was the young guy. I wasn't settled, but she was, man, I love her.
Yeah, well,
she was in there. But your mom, come on, man.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Speaking Soundly. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends about it. Spread the word. Be sure to follow, rate us, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. To keep up on future episodes, follow us on Instagram at SpeakingSNDLY and visit our website, artfulnarrativesmedia.com.
Tune in next week as we hear another inspiring artist speaking soundly.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.